Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Another cut to water allocations, this time for water rights holders in the Russian River area. It was announced just Wednesday. We have more on that in our next segment. Our feature topic today is wildfire, and it's a topic that has the attention of the U.S. Senate. CAL FIRE says the 2020 California wildfire season was characterized by a record-setting year of wildfires that burned across the state. The department says as of the end of the year, nearly 10,000 fires had burned over 4.2 million acres, making 2020 the largest wildfire season recorded in California's modern history. California's August complex fire has been described as the first gigafire, as the area burned exceeded 1 million acres. A Senate Appropriations Subcommittee held a hearing on forest management and preventing future fires, with U.S. Forest Chief Vicky Christensen testifying. California Senator Dianne Feinstein asked the first questions of the session.
My main concern, Mr. Chairman and distinguished senator from Alaska, is the salary situation. And let me put it right on the table. We have 19 million acres under federal jurisdiction.
Understood.
State pay is $70,000. That's what CAL FIRE pays to a state firefighter. The United States Forest Service pays $38,000. That's the differential. That's the problem. And the loss in fire is just tremendous. I think that we have to move some way in a bill to make that change. And I would like to ask the question of the leader of the department. Chief, do you believe that this inequity in pay makes a big difference in California, which has 19 million acres of federal fire land?
Thank you, Senator. Good morning. Thank you so much for the question and for acknowledging what is a real gap in competitive pay. It's very acute in California, but we have competitive pay issues when those are compared to state, local, and even the private sector. You named it. Average for a U.S. Forest Service firefighter is $38,000 a year. State, local, and private entities can range from $70,000 to $88,000 a year, and their benefits are better. We have folks that are absolutely committed to the mission of the Forest Service, but at that wage, that gap in the wage, they are going on to work for other entities. So we really appreciate working with you to bridge this gap and to discuss we need more of a year-round workforce as well.
Well, thank you, Chief. Thank you very much for that, because I've been around a long time. Was a mayor for 9 years of a city, and I've never seen a pay differential this stark as the difference between federal firefighter pay and state firefighter pay. And California is paying with 19 million acres that burned last year, 10,000 structures burned, and half of those were homes. So the reason I'm here is to say we need to move and do something about it. So let me ask another question. Do you have the mobility, Chief, to make the necessary moves to prevent this inequity from showing in actual firefighting?
Senator, thank you. We certainly can bring a strong voice to this problem, but we have to work across the federal government with the Office of Personnel Management and with, of course, other agencies, with the Federal Wildland Firefighters, Department of Interior being the largest, with the U.S. Forest Service. Secretary Vilsack has made a commitment to bring leadership to this, and we really look forward to working with you here in Congress to address this issue.
Thank you. I don't want to take more time, but I hope the members of this committee can see this differential. A starting salary of $38,500 as opposed to California foresters being paid $70,000 and having a state where 58% of the forest is under federal jurisdiction. That's the situation. Those are the actual numbers. So it's a real problem. And I would hope the committee would work with me and others and try to solve it.
Thank you very much, Senator, for making that important point. And we will now turn to opening statement for Chief Christensen.
Chairman Merkley and Ranking Member Murkowski and members of the committee, thanks for the invitation. Today, I will highlight the work we're doing to serve the American people and steward the nation's forests. I'll share how this work lines up with the new administration's highest priorities. Specifically, I will detail how the Forest Service is backing the effort to end the COVID pandemic. I'll share our resolve to employ science to tackle climate change, fight wildfires, and sustain productive, resilient forests. We are also doing our part to spur job growth, boost economies, and rebuild infrastructure. Lastly, I will touch on our staunch commitment to advance racial equity as we create an inclusive workplace where every employee feels respected and valued. Controlling the COVID-19 pandemic, I'm proud to say last year, despite the pandemic as well as historic natural disasters, the Forest Service rose to the challenge. We hosted 200% more visitors on the national forests as they sought respite from the surge of the pandemic. In the last 4 months, the Forest Service played a sizable role in helping USDA administer well over 2 million COVID vaccines across the U.S. But the long-term challenge we must confront is the crisis facing America's forests and grasslands. The crisis results from a changing climate. It induces severe wildfires, droughts, insects, disease, and invasive species infestations. And the severity and the frequency of our wildfires is increasing, significantly impacting our nation's forests at an unprecedented rate and destroying homes and businesses. The 2020 fire year became a call to action. We saw the most acres burned on the Forest Service lands since the big burn of 1910. In many places, forests will not come back on their own, which impacts the potential for carbon storage and limits the land's capacity to further mitigate climate change. Despite the pandemic, the Forest Service sustained our hazardous fuels reduction work, but we know it's not enough. We need a paradigm shift. Under the President's Jobs Plan, President Biden is calling on Congress to significantly invest in protection from extreme wildfire. After confronting record wildfires last year, we expect another long and arduous fire year in 21. We are prepared, but we remain deeply concerned about the welfare and the pay of our thousands of firefighters. We're grateful for your help in finding solutions that address pay equity, fatigue, and the mental well-being of our firefighters. Just this Monday, a Forest Service firefighter was seriously injured in New Mexico. He is a smoke jumper from Montana, and this demonstrates the seriousness of this business. Our thoughts and prayers are with him and his family, as I know yours are as well. You know, our infrastructure needs are pressing, as are the economic needs of Americans. When we improve the infrastructure of the national forests by upgrading roads, trails, and recreation sites, it spurs job growth and boosts economies. Thanks to the Great America Outdoor Act, we expect to create an additional 4,400 jobs and contribute an estimated $420 million to the GDP annually. And I understand the expectations that come with the fire funding fix, which went into effect this fiscal year, or fiscal year 20. And I want to assure you that the Forest Service remains a good investment. We understand congressional expectations for increasing accountability and oversight of fire spending. And during fiscal year 21, we did transition to the new budget structure that helps us increase the transparency of our spending. National forests and grasslands belong to every American. There should be equal access, and every American must feel a personal invitation and a connection to their lands. Every American deserves to have a motivated workforce that reflects our values, provides exemplary service, and mirrors our population. We are committed to both, starting in our own house. The Forest Service continues to work hard to end harassment, manage conflict, and create a work environment where every employee feels safe, valued, respected, and has a sense of belonging. Thank you so much. I look forward to your questions.
We continue with wildfires later in the show. Our news brief is up next. We'll be right back.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you. This segment was sponsored by the California Walnut Board.
Here's our news brief for today. With drought conditions resulting in low flows from the Russian River and historically low water storage levels at Lake Mendocino, the State Water Resources Control Board Wednesday notified 930 junior water rights holders in the Upper Russian River Basin that there's not enough water in the system and that diversions must be reduced immediately to safeguard the community's drinking water availability later this year and next year. The Deputy Director for the State Water Board's Division of Water Rights, Eric Ekdahl, says unless his department immediately reduces diversions, there is a real risk of Lake Mendocino emptying by the end of this year. The state is responding aggressively to unprecedented dry conditions throughout the state, including the Russian River watershed. As of April 30th, Lake Mendocino was at 43% of water supply capacity, and Lake Sonoma was at 62% of water supply capacity, the lowest on record for the state. Rainfall in Santa Rosa and Ukiah in 2021 is less than 40% of long-term averages. This follows a dry year in 2020, which was the third driest on record. In other news, USDA is seeking public comment on keeping our food supply chain resilient. Stephanie Ho has the story.
USDA has extended the deadline for the public comment period on plans to improve the country's food and agricultural supply chains.
The COVID pandemic showed to us that we have a brittle food system that can't really withstand a lot of shock to it. And so what we want to do is rebuild our food system into one that is resilient and can withstand the next crisis.
Mei Wu is the Deputy Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs.
USDA is working to strengthen the U.S. food and agricultural supply chain and to transform our food system. So we're trying to transform it to one that is more fair, it's more competitive, it's more transparent, it's healthier, it's more sustainable.
And in order to do that, USDA is seeking input from a wide range of supply chain participants.
We need feedback from farmers and ranchers and producers, food processors, and all the others who are important parts of the links in the chain.
The original deadline for the comment period was May 21st, 2021, but it has been extended to June 21st.
It can allow us to have as much time as possible to hear from everybody from the different sectors.
She says the COVID-19 pandemic revealed many supply chain weaknesses.
We're taking this opportunity to see what lessons we've learned from the pandemic, and then we want to apply them to how we want to transform our food system.
She notes there are supply chain areas USDA is especially interested in.
We want to hear about local and regional food systems. We want to hear about, you know, new market opportunities, especially around like value-added agriculture and products. We want to hear about fair and competitive markets, about how to advance efforts to transform the food system.
Other areas include,
how can we better meet the needs of the agricultural workforce? How can we better support and promote consumers' nutrition security, especially for low-income populations? And how can we better support the needs of socially disadvantaged and small to mid-sized producers?
She says the overall goal is making the country's food system more resilient.
What we really need to do is rebuild it into something that can withstand the next crisis, whatever it is. And so that's why we need to look at all the parts where we saw the breakdown happen.
She stresses that opportunities exist to not repeat the same old thing.
We know our food system broke down and we are in the process of rebuilding it, but we don't want to rebuild it to the old system that we had. This is our chance to rebuild it into something new and better and stronger and healthier and more equitable.
Meanwhile, what sorts of crises is USDA considering?
The next crisis might be another pandemic, or it could be something driven by our changing climate.
Or at the same time, she says it could be something completely unforeseen.
That's what we want to prepare our food system for, is whatever it is that the next crisis is.
More information can be found online at federalregister.gov with a search for the term supply chains. Again, the new deadline for public comment is June 21st, 2021. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
From the California Farm Bureau, they expect a larger crop, but cherry growers say heat and wind early in their season will likely prevent a near-record harvest. With the harvest now peaking, farmers say the dry, sunny spring allowed cherry trees to set plenty of fruit. Bing cherries remain the top variety grown in California, but farmers have been planting more of a type called Coral Champagne, which matures earlier. Peak cherry harvest will continue through the first week of June. Environmental groups have asked a federal court to vacate the Navigable Waters Protection Act enacted during the Trump administration. The motion for a summary judgment comes as the Biden administration continues to review the existing water rule. DTN says the South Carolina Coastal Conservation League filed the motion in a South Carolina U.S. District Court. They asked the court to vacate the rule based on what they call undisputed facts, including what they say has been lost protection for U.S. waters. In its motion, the Coastal Conservation League says the Army Corps of Engineers has been flooded with requests to get approved jurisdictional determinations securing the right to, quote, pollute or fill nearly excluded streams and wetlands free of the Clean Water Act's permitting regulations. That's our news brief for today. We continue talking about wildfires right after this.
Having problems with nematodes? Promax is your number one solution. Promax is a powerful fungicide and nematicide that works to kill and control nematodes and soil-borne disease. Promax is a powerful and easy-to-use product in your fields. WaterRight Technologies is your source for this powerful solution. Visit WRTAG.com/Promax for more information.
Agromiora Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromiora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromiora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Rootpack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today.
Continuing the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee hearing on forest management and preventing future fires, Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon chairs the subcommittee.
Ranking Member Murkowski and Chief Christensen and our other colleagues and constituents join us in person and remotely. Welcome to this appropriations hearing on budgeting for the future of forest management. While we eagerly await the release of the details of President Biden's first budget request, we still have plenty to discuss today about the impact that funding for the Forest Service makes in forests and communities in Oregon, in Alaska, and in every state across the United States. Chief Christensen, thank you for joining us today. As a Washington State native and with your 26 years in the State Department of Natural Resources, you are well-versed in the issues and ecosystems of the Pacific Northwest and the dangers of climate chaos to our forests and future generations. Forests are integral to the identity of my home state of Oregon. We value forests as the headwaters for our state's clean drinking water, the genesis of our salmon runs, the backbone of our outdoor recreation and rural economies. The Forest Service and the dedicated professionals that make up its ranks are critical to the state, our people, and our economy. The 2020 wildfire season was one of the most destructive in Oregon history. Fires devastated the towns of Detroit, Gates, Phoenix, and Talent. I will never forget visiting those towns and seeing the incinerated remains. The fires burned more than 1 million acres and took the lives of 11 Oregonians. Last summer, I drove from the northern boundary to the southern boundary of the state and back more than 600 miles and was never out of the smoke of the fires. It is clear from the science that we need to restore our forests because they play a significant role in curing the climate crisis. I'm ready to help the administration provide the resources the Forest Service needs to improve forest management practices, stop the incidents of catastrophic fire, and invest in the small towns and rural areas that anchor our nation's natural resource and outdoor recreation economies. One tool I have long supported for that goal is the Collaborative Forest Landscape Restoration Program. In Oregon, we've seen successful collaboratives work to reduce the risk of fire, bringing together all the stakeholders from across the spectrum, restoring habitats, improving recreational opportunities, at the same time creating and maintaining jobs. It's critically important that the Forest Service prioritize reducing the backlog of approved fuels management projects that are sitting on the shelf. In Oregon, there are more than 2 million acres that have completed NEPA review and are ready to be implemented, and I'd really like to work with you, Chief Christensen, to reduce this backlog and jumpstart these projects. Today, as we examine the challenges and opportunities for budgeting for the future of forest management, I'm proud to say that the funding landscape has recently changed significantly for the Forest Service. In less than 2 years, we have passed several landmark achievements that will have lasting positive impacts on conservation, the health of our forests, and management of public lands. First, the wildfire suppression cap adjustment became operational in fiscal year 2020, providing a funding stream outside regular discretionary budget protect the Forest Service from the ruinous practice of fire borrowing. Fire borrowing, that situation when terrible fires occur, and the budget is exceeded, the Forest Service had to borrow from all its other programs in order to fight the fires, disrupting those critical other programs. But now we have a challenge because the budget caps are expiring, and so the foundation of that solution also expires. And to fix this, we will have to come together and work to create a similar pool of funds to turn to when the ordinary budget is exceeded. If we fail, fire borrowing will come roaring back, doing major damage to the Forest Service, and I don't think any of us want to see that happen again. In fiscal year 2021, the Forest Service proposed and Congress enacted a significant reorganization of its budget structure. This restructuring created a new appropriations account for general operations and consolidated personnel costs. This sounds a little bit like a sleepy accounting issue, but these changes will improve workforce planning and foster better understanding of forest activities' actual costs and help us target the appropriations where funds are needed most. And last year, we enacted the Great American Outdoors Act, which provides permanent mandatory funding to the Land and Water Conservation Fund. This monumental legislation will allow the Forest Service to assist states in keeping working forests as forests through the Forest Legacy Program championed by Chairman Leahy and bring into federal ownership special places that deserve preservation. The Act also provided a 5-year mandatory funding stream for deferred maintenance at our land management agencies, of which the Forest Service will receive $285 million per year for a total of $1.4 billion by fiscal year 2025. I'm pleased, of course, that there are several Oregon projects on the inaugural list of projects, like replacing the boiler at the historic and iconic Timberline Lodge. Yet, that is only one of the several very expensive repairs needed at Mount Hood and across the Forest Service lands in the state and across the nation. So I look forward to hearing about the process for prioritizing future projects. Chief Christensen, there's a lot of work to do, and I look forward to your presentation today and how the Forest Service plans to undertake these enormous responsibilities. And with that,
he later asked these questions about clearing fire hazards.
And Chief Christensen, the President's American Jobs Plan prioritizes investments in protecting communities from wildfires, which is great. And that means hazardous fuels reduction. The Fiscal Year 21 Interior Bureau bill directed you to provide Congress an estimate of the federal investment required to treat and restore federal and non-federal acres classified as high risk for wildfire. How are we doing on getting that report to Congress?
Yes, thank you, Senator Merkley. The fire hazard potential report you're referring to, and you know, that's with Department of Interior. The report is in its final clearance, and it really has activated our collective science on this paradigm shift of what we really have to do to strategically treat at least 2 to 4 times more than what we do now. If we're going we have a scale mismatch, and we have to match the treatments for the needs on the landscape. So you will be seeing it very soon after it makes it out of clearance.
So I'm almost happy with your answer, but not quite, because the date in law was to deliver it by March 27th, very specific. Can you make calls and get that out of clearance? We need to have it in order for this subcommittee to be able to do its work to determine, do we need to advance far more funds for forest treatments, which I think we all believe we do, but we really need the analysis. Can you make sure we get that by the end of this month, a few days from now?
I will do everything I can. I really hear you on the need, Chairman.
Thank you very much, because I think understanding the scope of the challenge is essential for us to act appropriately. Now we have the fire fix problem, in which we had this pool of funds that was outside of the Interior Subcommittee Funding Committee, so essentially the equivalent of a FEMA fund to cover the expenses if we had a terrible fire year, so you didn't have to do fire borrowing. Now, because the Budget Control Act has expired for FY22, we have the situation where we no longer have the underlying foundation on which that fix existed. So have you already connected to the Secretary of the Interior and OMB about the importance of reestablishing the fire fix by having an appropriate fire emergency fund?
Yes, Senator, I will say affirmatively, but I just need to emphasize the importance of the fix. You said it froze the rising 10-year average for our for covering suppression from our regular budget, and it prevented the fire borrowing. Those are huge and really important. The USDA and OMB are aware of this situation as well.
Great. Well, I'm happy to engage in conference calls or anything else to make sure that this is understood, because we cannot fail in order to support your agency, Forest Service. We cannot fail to end fire borrowing and let that return to be the norm in fiscal year 22. Turning to collaborative forest landscape restoration, CFLR projects, we have 4 of them in Oregon. They're incredibly effective at bringing people together across the spectrum from the timber side to the environmental side, work out prescriptions for the forest, for thinning and for treatments, making the forest more fire resilient, producing saw logs, producing jobs. Well, that's my opinion. What's your opinion? The CFLR program, is it working?
It is very much working. It has outsized itself in the results for the investments. You know, there's 11% treatable national forest acres, and just 9% of the agency's spending went to CFLRP. And with that 11% of the funding, 19% of the agency's total hazardous fuels were accomplished through CFLRP, 15% of our timber volume, and 15% of our habitat enhancement was accomplished.
So given it's so successful, we've already authorized doubling the size of the program. I think it's time we try to fund the doubling of the size to $80 million. My understanding is we currently have 24 projects across the country. We double the funding. Can we get to 48 projects? I think there are plenty of candidates being submitted.
There are very much.
Great. Look forward to working with you on that. And when we do this work in the forest, we have had a challenge in which the Forest Service has not been completely transparent about its contracting process and the role of domestic American workers versus crews brought in from out of country. This was an issue that came up in 2009 when Senator Wyden and I and others pushed for a big increase in funding for hazardous fuels reductions. And the contracting process was one in which crews were recruited out of state, required out of country, required foreign languages, never consulted with the 5,000 people who were on the list who wanted to do this work inside Oregon. We need to make sure that H-2B is a backup for workers when Americans are not ready to fill these jobs. Can we get full transparency from the Forest Service on this issue?
Yes, sir. We are happy to work with you on this, and we're already providing information. I'm really drilling into the implementation of the Great America's Outdoors Act. And 70% of that work will be done through contracts and agreements, but we have a special focus on small businesses and minorities and in the local area. And the other piece of the work through the agreements is some really important work being done by the civilian conservation corps or the conservation corps. So we're working with NGOs there. So I'll be happy to track with you how we're doing on GAOA as well, Senator.
Thank you. And one aspect of this that I want to emphasize is the possibility of having firefighters become year-round crews where they turn from firefighting to forest restoration, which could be great as family jobs, really pillars in our forest communities. I come from Douglas County. It's one of the most timber-intensive counties in the entire United States. People are kind of born, as we like to say, with a chainsaw in their hand, ready to do work in the woods. Want to make sure they're never unaware of opportunities to pursue that work.
More on wildfires right after this.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Continuing the Senate hearing on wildfires, Senator Martin Heinrich of New Mexico asked about grazing permits.
Thank you, Chairman. Chief, welcome.
Thank you.
Across the West, balancing the multiple use mandate of the Forest Service can be very challenging. And one of the places we've seen this in the Southwest is where we have occasionally had livestock wildlife conflicts, particularly with bighorn sheep, native cutthroat trout, and endangered Mexican gray wolves. And one of the tools to resolve wildlife livestock conflicts that has been successful in a very limited number of cases, but quite successful, is the voluntary retirement of grazing allotment permits. And it's provided quite a bit of economic certainty to individual producers. I've heard from several livestock producers in New Mexico who would like to retire their permits and also very much want to keep their family's base property because so many family memories are tied up in those places. But there's really no clear process for doing this, even in cases where there's a very obvious and demonstrated sort of local conflict that we're trying to resolve. So can you explain why there's not a clear administrative procedure for the Forest Service to accept and retire grazing allotments at the request of the permit holder as a way to resolve some of these long-term resource conflicts?
Yes, I think but there's two issues that need to be responded to. First, a permittee may choose to waive their grazing permit back to the Forest Service at any time. There's no prohibition on that. The decision to actually close the grazing allotment is made by the Forest Service, and it is guided by the goals and the objectives of the land management plan of that particular forest. But then you mentioned, you know, different conflicts, so that would be a part of the decision evaluation that the Forest Service would make.
I think this is a place that warrants additional focus, and particularly the idea of making sure that families can keep their base properties as well as part of the process of resolving some of these conflicts. And certainly, I look forward to working with you on this.
Be glad to do that.
Yes,
thank you.
Pursue some of these. You heard a lot about LRP.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the challenges we have, we all recognize how many acres of forest need to be treated right now, both with hazardous fuels and more broadly towards a goal of restoration. And in New Mexico, we have a large backlog of already NEPA-ready permitted projects where the backlog is not delays because of environmental permits, NEPA processing, or lawsuits, just because we have not adequately funded these projects and because of staff constraints. So I wanted to get your thoughts on the need for increasing the scale of some of these programs that we know work and that all of us, if you listen to, you know, Republicans and Democrats from the West on these issues, we know we need to do more. So is the biggest solution available to us just scaling up those existing programs like CFRP?
Thank you, Senator. I could, yes, and. Those CFLRP, good neighbor agreements, stewardship contracting, they're all really important tools and to leverage in the right place. And we have to look at the whole landscape, and we use what we do best at, right? The states have some resources; they're good at some things. The Forest Service might be good at some other things. The tribes bring incredible traditional knowledge. I mean, we need to work on the whole mix on the landscape, and all those tools are important. And the state forest action plans, and the New Mexico has just completed their state forest action plan, and it calls for significant increase. But it's not just an increase, it's strategically placing those treatments. You know, we have, our scientists have mapped the fire sheds across the whole country. We know where the highest priority fire sheds are that transmit the most fire. And if we can treat strategically 40% of that landscape, we can bring it back into balance. So we need to be strategic, and we need to up our game 2 to 4 times more than what we do now already. And that's going to take resources, and that's going to take significant resources and significant staffing capacity.
And Chairman, you heard 2 to 4 times what we're doing now, and I think that's something we should all be supporting. I think your concept of marrying up the need for firefighters throughout much of the year now, if not the entire year, with restoration as well, so that we can get the forest back in a condition where prescribed fire can actually be used much more readily to maintain that forest condition is a path to a lot more sustainable and healthy forests in the future.
Thank you very much, Senator, and I look forward to exploring that idea thoroughly with the Forest Service. I think that that has a lot of potential value.
Experts say the state's wildfire season is increasing every year, and also the yearly peak has shifted from August to July. That is our show for today. If you'd like to send me comments, please email me, sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. From the JCS Marketing Crew, thanks for listening.